James, good morning. How are you?
Good morning and howdy.
Glad to have you back here.
Glad to be here.
Let's first of all, let's dive right into high tech, because that's kind of what your world is. And we now have a second provider for high-speed internet in College Station.
We sure do. Wirestar. Absolutely. The city just signed a lease for our dark fiber. That's the fiber optic cable the city owns that we weren't using and that we didn't have a foreseeable use for. And so we, several months ago, signed or gave ourselves the ability to lease the dark fiber out. And a few weeks ago, we actually leased out our dark fiber, a two-strand loop all the way around College Station to Wirestar, so they could extend ultra-high-speed gigabit fiber service to initially businesses, restaurants, hotels, multifamily units.
Okay, now, can they make it without the multifamily units? Because obviously a lot of them are already connected.
A lot of them are connected, but as you can imagine, the device count per resident of multifamily units is skyrocketing, and the bandwidth they're consuming is really going up. So they're all in processes of evaluation of whether or not it's going to service their units. So, yeah, they can make it with just commercial, especially considering that they didn't have to incur several hundred thousand or several million dollars of capital expense to run a fiber loop around town. That was kind of the whole point, is the city got a little bit of revenue, they got a fiber loop around town, and so it it made it possible. And
so and I don't get too far into this, but anyway, dark fiber means there was nothing going through it.
Correct.
Is that basically right?
So it wasn't even lit up.
Correct. How was that much fiber laid to begin with in the first place?
Yeah, so when you lay down fiber, there's really not a massive cost difference between laying two strands and laying 48 strands. And so you always put more than you need in anticipation of future needs. The really cool part of about technology in general is that it gets cheaper, smaller, and faster every year. Mm-hmm. And so new equipment's come out that allow you to push a lot more data through this same fiber, and so that's what we've been using at the city, so we didn't need some of our strands, and so we actually leased it out. It turned into a revenue source for the taxpayers, which I think is really cool. And outside of that, it was way cheaper for Wirestar to lease this from us than to build it on their own, and now they can actually extend service. And eventually, they have a residential survey on their website that neighborhoods can go to and say, hey, we want service. And if enough people in a specific neighborhood say they want service, then Wirestar can extend through the same fiber loop service out to neighborhoods.
James Benham joining us this morning. Okay, so, and this is in your wheelhouse. So what does this mean now for a development for College Station? How many other like-sized cities are there in America that have this kind of service? And what does that mean commercially, not for residents?
I'd say we're in the top 10% of U.S. cities. I can't specify a specific number of cities because you have rural co-ops that have done this. And it really gets confusing when you look at how many have leased fiber or they have a co-op, or, you know, and the state law differs so much. I'd say we're in the top 10% of U.S. cities now. College Station is the top 10% because of our approach to bandwidth, the fact that we lease our fiber, and the end objective is to have a competitive bandwidth marketplace for our consumers in College Station so they get better service at lower prices.
Okay, but how about business? Let's get away from residential.
Sure, businesses as well. Okay. And actually, the Wirestar announcement was all about companies and, you know, their initial service. And, you know, as a 14-year business owner, I'm very concerned with our businesses. If their electric bills were 14 times higher than going to Austin, I'd be concerned. I'm equally concerned if their telecom bills are 14 times higher. So you're talking about companies that for a commercial gigabit would have paid easily 10 times as much for what Wirestar will have commercial gigabit for.
Okay. I'm going to define you as the point man on the concerns about funding for RVP and the budget hearings. I'll give you a chance to maybe expand on that.
Yeah, you know, What I really was aiming at is allowing the city of College Station to have representation on the executive committee. If you know how most of these organizations work, a lot of the real action is at the executive committee level, and that's what I wanted. At the Convention and Visitors Bureau, who we've also discussed quite a bit, we have executive committee seats, and that's what I wanted here. And we weren't getting the traction that I wanted to see on getting a seat there at the executive committee. At the same time, the RVP was proposing an expansion in the board, which would mean that for the same amount of money we contributed, we would get less votes on the overall board of directors. And I didn't feel that was in the best interest of the citizens of College Station. And so I said, hey, let's hold back. I'm not saying no. And certainly the people they were proposing were great people. It wasn't about that. It was to say, look, we need to really think about how College Station's represented on the board, how we're represented on the executive committee. And so we had some questions we had to work through. The really good news is that the The RVP is responding pretty positively, and they've formed a subcommittee on their bylaw review, and we had to help them get into compliance with some of their bylaws as well, and they've done that. It hasn't been a overly complicated process to date. We just had to have some discussions about it.
Sure. Food trucks, your point man there. Yeah. Smile comes to your face now because at least you're the beginning
trucks.
Of that.
Yeah, I love food trucks.
But now what are we going to do? Because, you know, it's really not a bucolic setting to be in the old Albertsons parking lot with a picnic table or whatever.
It's your word of the day, folks.
Exactly.
Bucolic.
So, I mean, where you have them is going to be as important as their existence.
Sure. I mean, you know, I've been to some crazy food truck parks in Austin and Portland and Los Angeles that were in unlikely places. The whole point is to allow...
Excuse me, but there's a density there that we don't have here.
Yeah, there's density. Well, we have an enormous amount of density on Northgate.
At Northgate. But yeah. Do we have it anyplace else? Because you know what? I don't really want to go to Northgate for a food truck, okay? I'm not a citizen of College Station, but I mean, those people have to be considered as
sure,
well.
Sure, sure, absolutely. What we're doing at the city is certainly not running these food truck parks. We're permitting them. We're allowing the private market to operate as efficiently as possible. We have a lot of regulations on food trucks anyway, on how far from existing establishments they can be, and you know, trying to make sure we protect our brick and mortar businesses. And we've also stepped up compliance efforts to make sure that the food trucks are paying city sales tax in College Station and not in the city where they're headquartered, because you know that it's a point of sale that matters on sales tax. So we've done a lot of work to make sure we have a fair and equal playing ground. There's a couple of locations that I've heard of that are in consideration that are not necessarily going to happen or not. And one would be in South College Station, one would be on Northgate, where you have either a market that's underserved by the restaurant business in South College Station, where you have an enormous amount of rooftops with not nearly the appropriate amount of restaurants. And then you have a lot of foot traffic and density like you do on Northgate. And so the objective was to allow people to organize these and for the private market to operate efficiently. And I believe we accomplished that. We had to make some changes in the ordinance to get it passed. But it I'm pretty happy with how it all worked out. And I'm excited to see a new type of product come on the marketplace. You know, I've talked to a lot of people about why they choose to live in College Station or leave and go to other cities, and amenities like this are part of the mix. I mean, certainly they care about business owners care about air service, they care about tax rates, they care about bandwidth, they care about a lot of things. I've been trying to tackle all of them at once. As you can imagine,
sure.
We've done some work with Easterwood Airport on their marketing. We're doing some more work with them on a potential to try and acquire more routes. All of the things that I've heard from business owners and professionals on why they choose to leave or stay, I've tried to work on. Amenities like food truck parks are just one of those things in the mix. People love going to them. We don't have them. We didn't permit them. And I think it's going to be an amenity people really enjoy. And you can turn, I believe, what you just called bucolic settings into rather nice places. And this allows for redevelopment of some unused parking lots. That I think will be attractive for the citizens. And it's fun. I mean, if you like progressive dinners like me, it's really fun to have a food truck park because you can have your appetizer and then walk 5 feet and have your entree and walk another 5 feet
sure.
and have your dessert. They're enjoyable. I think students are going to use the heck out of them. There's already a quasi-food truck park right next to the Teague building by the Commons on campus. There's right. like four or five food trucks there, and they get heavily used by students.
Now, and of course, the population density is important. Absolute worst case scenario over the weekend. Two students hit and killed
sure.
trying to cross University Drive. Don't know there's a lot that government can do, but I'd like to get your thoughts there.
You know, deaths are tragic in every regard, and my heart goes out to their families. I think we all mourn anyone dying in any regard for any reason whatsoever. I've spent a lot of time riding along with our police, riding along with our fire. We've responded on some tough cases. It was probably the most eye-opening part of the last 3 years in my first term on city council was spending time with our first responders and running on calls like that. I can't imagine what it was like even for our first responders to be there. And it certainly always makes you do a gut check on our policy. Are we doing everything possible to protect our citizens? At the end of the day, you can't always protect people from themselves or for their own bad decisions. I don't know all the details in this case, so I don't know if, you know, I think that's pending, up to a pending investigation. So I'm just saying in general, you do your best. That means that we have to have safe places for people to walk, good sidewalks. We have to have good crosswalks. We've got to have well-lit streets. We've got to have a police force that enforces speed limits. And that's what I'm saying. I don't know if the driver really was doing everything they were supposed to be doing.
Sure.
You know, if so that's my point. I think that we've got to make sure, and we have on University Drive, we have worked really hard to extend sidewalks, to appoint crosswalks, to have lit crosswalks, to make sure we have enough lighting. Our police officers regularly patrol University heavily. We established a substation on Northgate just to make sure we'd have a local presence there. We put together one of the most effective form of policing with the bicycle police, because they are on the ground. They can hear, they can see. I actually was the first councilman to do a ride-along with them, which was awesome. But our bicycle police really patrol heavily the area of Northgate because there's so much pedestrian density.
Mm-hmm.
And I've watched them keep people from doing things that would have killed them. I've watched it happen. And so when you have a really effective ground-level police force that's just in that beat, you've got a substation, you've got well-lit streets, good sidewalks, good crosswalks. There's even, obviously, the state put a pedestrian wall on Northgate to keep people from spilling into University Drive. At some point, you have to say people need to be responsible for themselves. But we have to be able to honestly go to bed every night and say, man, we did everything we could today to protect the citizens of College Station, and anything beyond that is at the will of God.
James Benham joining us today. Let's turn our attention to maybe where the next high density population area will be, and that'll be Holloman Drive, right around where we already have several apartment complexes and the extension
a lot
across
more
there.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So what's your view as to what needs to be done in advance of that? Because it all can't be done beforehand. But what does Holloman Drive need to look like 4 years from now?
Holloman Drive South, you mean,
mm-hmm.
south of 2818.
Right.
So you have the barracks kind of anchoring on one end, and you've got the new Aspen development that's coming in on the top end. And one of the requirements that we made on the Aspen development was making sure that bus service would be able to run there, and that was really critical. And A&M did commit to extending bus service. So bus service is critical to that area to make sure that our students don't have to drive. They can actually catch a bus to class. We're also changing some of the lane configuration to encourage them to actually use the U-turn under loop under the under 2818, and obviously we changed the entire way that we're issuing bonds so we can issue COs on Holloman Drive South sooner than we would have otherwise, because it's such a critical area. Remember, every single one of those that goes in generates property tax, every single one of those, and not a small amount of property tax.
Right.
And so they do certainly help pay for all the expansion that's needed in that area. Students have to have a place to live. We had a student that lived on the golf course when I was in school, but I don't think that's really an acceptable solution for student housing.
Probably not.
They have to have a place to live, and if the free market wants to place it there because it's logical, and it is a logical area to densify student housing, we need to make some accommodations for that because they will be paying a lot of property tax.
Probably driven by legislation in Austin, but your city council decided to back away from putting together bonds and
sure.
instead the certificates of obligation that you just mentioned. Is that the trend in the future as far as you're concerned for funding in College District?
Yeah, I think for non-optional items, yes. You'll have COs issued for transportation, critical projects. It's really challenging to lock in your transportation plan for 8 years. I mean, we had a lot of change occur between the last bond issue and this potential bond issue that would have significantly altered our plans on transportation funding. Believe it or not, cities change much faster than people think. Populations move much quicker than people can plan for. The school districts experienced that quite a bit. They got caught off guard by the major population moves that took place over the last 8 years, and they couldn't have possibly anticipated those. And so I think that COs it's just all that is debt that we issue, right? So either one, the same thing, same interest rate, same debt, basically the same interest rate, the same debt. We're going to issue those. I think general obligation bonds that the voters approve are great for projects that are optional, projects that are somewhat controversial. They're big in dollars, and the city council needs the explicit will of the people to make sure they're okay with that. But we have an obligation to make sure that police, fire, and roads are taken care of here. And so I think that COs are a great solution for critical projects like that we know we have to do.
Sure. Well, let me open it up to you. What are some things that you'd like to mention?
You know, we recently authorized in our budget a project for the Open Data Initiative is what we called it. And it's all about transparency in government. And I'm really excited. I think this is going to happen in the next 6 to 9 months, we'll have a portal that the citizens of College Station can go to and pull down any piece of data they can possibly think of that's subject to open records, right? It's all open public data. And so that's going to be really huge. With that, it's going to come some apps they can install on their phone to interact with the city government, extract data, pull down lists of whatever you can think of, recent ordinances, payments to vendors, you name it, it's going to be there. So I'm really excited about this. It's going to be a big win for transparency in government. It's going to allow a lot of people who have to file Freedom of Information Act requests for specific types of data to run those reports on their own. So it's going to reduce some staff time at the city of College Station. And from a nerd perspective, it's going to have an API, an application programmers interface, that allow software developers to write their own apps that integrate with city data. So there's going to be some really cool things that come from that.
Very good. From a nerd perspective, you might like this. We found the Daily Beast interviewed the screenwriter for Back to the Future, Bob Gale. And he said they basically were thinking of Donald Trump when they came up with Biff Tannen.
Certainly the hair. In particular, when you look at Back to the Future 2 and the alternate 1980s Biff Tannen, that hairdo would be very similar to Donald Trump. We actually had a Back to the Future party at our office on Wednesday night. We had a DeLorean there. We had one Biff, and we had about 30 Martys, and we had about 10 Docs. It was quite a bit of fun. We had a lot of technology on display. I should note that they had drones in Back to the Future 2.
Yeah.
We have drones. They had smart clothing. We have smart clothing. They had augmented reality visors. We actually had our augmented reality visors on display. We had our virtual reality system on display. We had big giant projector TVs on the screen that were interactive. I mean, pretty much as we could. We even had a hoverboard. I should point out it was powered by a gas blower.
But who was the winner in the Doc Brown? Was it a far and away winner? I mean, did you have
one Doc Brown that really went out of his way with the clear tie, and he really had the shiny suit and the giant hair, and he had the visor. He really went far and above and beyond on Doc Brown. I was really impressed with that.
Excellent. Thanks for the time this morning.
Thank you.
Yep, that's James Benner from the College Station City Council.